You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
And welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 162.
This is finally the episode that I've been waiting for a while.
Okay.
My favorite sport, baseball. In a Major League Baseball season, each team plays 162 games in the regular season.
So we've completed like one season's worth of the Family Gamers?
Hey, look, they say it's a grind.
They're right.
Hey, everybody, we are the Family Gamers. As always, I'm your host, Andrew, and I'm joined by my lovely, wonderful, and amazing wife, Anitra.
Aw, that's me.
So this week, we have some interesting stuff to talk about. We're going to talk about the games that we've been playing. I think we're going to bring back a segment that we haven't done in a little while, so we'll have some fun with that later on in the show. And then after our break, we are going to talk about add-ons and collections and the ways that board gaming, especially with our kids who like to get every little thing, you know, how
kids are natural collectors.
It's weird how you go to the store and your kids just want to buy anything. They want to buy something.
Yes.
It's about the transaction, right? So we're going to talk about board game collections versus hoarding. We're going to talk about blinging out your collections, all sorts of kind of stuff. In that vein, and we'll explain why that's our topic, I think, a little bit later. But first, let's talk about what we've been playing.
All right, let's do that. Well, we tried one of the new Brainwaves series from Cosmos, The Astute Goose.
We did. It's
wasn't it cool?
Interesting little quick memory game.
Yeah, but it's not your usual memory game where you're trying to like flip stuff over and remove them from the board.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, you have a series of numbers 1 through 6, and each of those is over a card, sometimes multiple numbers over a card. And each card has a person with a pet wearing some color of shirt,
mm-hmm,
and some decoration or accessory.
So to begin the game, what you'll do is you'll take a look at all those people, and then once you think you've got them more or less memorized, you turn the people face down. So you have numbers, but you have all of the cards. You can't see the people.
All the cards
anymore.
Are face down, yeah.
Right, and this is key because the goal of the game is to try to remember what is on these cards.
Yes, so you roll two dice. One has a number, which is which card position you're looking at. And the other one is a die that indicates whether you have to remember the color of the shirt, the pet of the person, or what kind of accessory or decoration they had. If you remember that correctly, you get to keep the card. You look at it secretly, and if you did not remember it correctly, you keep it face down and let everyone else at the table guess. And the first person who gets it correctly gets the card instead.
And then, of course, if nobody gets the card, it just goes back. If somebody gets the card, then you take a new one off the deck. Everybody looks at it for 10 seconds, and then you put it face down in
and
that
you keep going.
Spot, and you just keep going. This reminds me of some games that we would play as kids. It's got the same kind of memory thing, like, take a look at this picture. Look at everything. Okay, we're going to flip it over.
Yeah.
And how many of these things do you remember? How many of those things do you remember? That kind of thing. It reminds me of that a lot.
It had a little bit more adult feel, especially the constant cycling in and out of the cards.
Oh, that was the worst because we didn't roll four for the longest time.
And then we're like, I don't remember what was there.
That was like 15 cards ago.
Maybe yellow?
Yeah. But that was fun. That was a really fun game from Cosmos. We are actually going to have somebody from Cosmos on the show in a couple of weeks. I don't know exactly when it's going to be, but there's been so much really cool stuff coming out of Cosmos lately that's really an alternate take on gaming.
Mm-hmm.
So all the exit boxes, of course, we've talked about those before. There's the Codebreaker stuff, which isn't in the States yet.
And there's the new adventure series. Yep.
And then, of course, the Brainwave stuff. So Tom Wetzel from Cosmos is going to come on the show, and we're going to talk a lot about those kinds of things. It's going to be a fun show, I think.
That's going to be cool.
But yeah, they're doing some really cool stuff.
All right. What else have we been playing? We played a little bit more Spy Club.
We did.
We got the kids to play it with us again for the first time in like a year.
I don't know what it is. They just didn't want to play. But I think when we got them to sit down and play the game, Claire still didn't love it. But Asher was starting to get it.
Finally. Honestly, I feel like Spy Club really shines once you start doing those little mini campaigns and you keep getting new extra stuff to
add. They're really good. Yeah, it's really, really interesting. And they actually feel impressively organic considering it's made up of a kind of a set of reusable pieces.
Generic
tiles.
Yeah, and
they
stuff
do a really, really
use.
Good job making those actually interesting. And if you do the side missions, then you kind of get some perks that help you along the way. I really, you know, the first couple times we played Spy Club, it was really, really difficult for us. And then we kind of figured out some of the strategy pieces to it. And, you know, we actually talked to some of the folks who helped make the game. And it's, I wouldn't say it's easy now. It's still, it's not something you can just kind of blow through, even though it's a game that ostensibly is targeted towards kids. But I don't think it's, it doesn't feel as insurmountable anymore, for sure.
Once we kind of figured out the strategy for it, I think it hits in just the right spot where we're fairly consistently winning now, but it's always by the skin of our teeth.
Yeah, it gets tight near the end. I mean, I don't think it's that bad. It's
sometimes
not,
it is.
Yeah, but that is it's a great game, and it's really, really interesting. It's almost the kind of game that I don't want to say that I wish there was a sequel to it, but that kind of mosaic style game is just really, really super fascinating. I mean, there are 200 cards in the campaign deck, and we're halfway through our campaign.
We've seen like six of them.
Yeah, I mean, there is just so much replay. I mean, the game's a little bit of a bear to set up. I think that's probably my biggest issue with it. But beyond that, I mean, I really love how they reuse cards in that game. I'm really, really impressed with the elegance of how they put that together. Randy Hoyt and Jason Kingsley put together it's really solid. Like, sometimes you play a game and you're like, okay, this game was fun, but
I'm done.
I don't feel like it took a lot of engineering to put this thing together and these kinds of things. And this is a game where the care and the craft of what they did to put this game together, I think, is really evident when you play it.
Yeah.
So that is Spy Club.
You're going to have to say the name of this next one. I can't do it.
Really? You can't? I think it's because my dad used to yell at me in German.
That could be.
Although it's not German. It's actually not German. Portuguese, yeah. I think. But the game is Arrail from Pandasaurus Games.
That's Arrail.
So basically, the very fast version of this is Tetris the board game.
It's a version of Tetris the board game.
Yep.
Unlike other examples we've seen of Tetris the board game, you're not really allowed to rotate pieces once they're coming onto your board.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of, you get them in a certain orientation and it's take it or leave it. You can affect the orientation a little bit, but affects orientation for everybody.
Right. So the game has all of the classic Tetris pieces on this kind of like pinwheel thing.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to your turn, there's three pieces on this pinwheel and you have three actions, and it's either rotate 90 degrees or take a piece off.
Yeah.
And if you rotate 90 degrees, you're rotating the entire pinwheel, which means all three of the pieces, or, you know, two or one or whatever, depending on how many there are left. So it becomes extremely strategic very, very quickly. The goal of the game is to have the biggest party. So you do this by creating combinations of pieces in the same color.
There's four colors, yeah.
There's four colors, yeah. And different pieces are different colors. And I really enjoy the game. I think it's a lot more strategic than I realized when I first started to play it. I've probably played it three or four times now.
Yeah, it feels way more thinky than I would have expected, given both the theme and the look of it.
Mm-hmm. Right. It has a very casual look. That's actually a great point.
It looks like you're trying to throw a block party, and all the people that are in your party happen to be in the shape of Tetris pieces. I mean, that sounds pretty casual.
Well, I mean, I'm just trying to think of how I would describe... You know what the art style reminds me of? Is Curious George.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
It's kind of that long, thin person sort of art style. That's what it makes me think of.
Especially the old Curious George.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I don't know. I mean, it's a bunch of people having parties. You know, they're all having a good time. You're playing Tetris. And the first couple times I played this, I played with Chris, who we played with, and he demolished me. But this time I was a lot more serious. And that's why I was so awful to him in that game, by the way.
and in the end, you managed to squeak out the win because you were so terrible to him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So that was Arrail from Pandasaurus. That is a fun game that I like a fair bit. I have played more Cabo. I am really, really I mean, this is a game that creeped up on me. And all of a sudden, I'm a huge fan of it because it moves so fast.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit of a memory game. And there's... I just like it a lot.
I like the idea. I still haven't played it much, so I'd like to play it some more.
Yeah, this is one of those games where you need to play it like 5 or 6 times, and then you kind of get
really
into,
wrap your head around
flow and
the flow and what kind of numbers are and what. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, the mechanics are so simple in this game, mm-hmm. and it's so quick to just shuffle up the cards and deal them out and then go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I like about it. It fits in that sweet spot where I can just pull out a deck of cards and be like, I'm going to teach you a game. It's going to take 5 minutes to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
This is basically golf. It's old school golf, but there's some special powers in it.
Yeah.
Right? Great game. I really like that a lot. We got in the mail a game that I am so excited about finally getting.
Are you talking about Jetpack Joyride?
I am talking about Jetpack Joyride.
So you all may remember that we reviewed Jetpack Joyride as one of our very first
I actually think it was our review. First Snap review.
I think you're right.
This game, okay. Lucky Duck, so the history of Lucky Duck, I think we talked about it on the show before. Vince Vergangene, who is the CEO of Lucky Duck, used to do video games, came over because they wanted to do a board game for Vikings Gone Wild, which was a Facebook game, fell in love with board gaming, and so there's always been this kind of video game pulse in the board games released by Lucky Duck Games. So they mm-hmm. did Jetpack Joyride. They did Fruit Ninja. Mm-hmm. The game Chronicles of Crime is I really think
augmented reality.
Totally,
like,
it's a
combo
completely
play. Yeah.
Different kind of game. I mean, it's fantastic. Obviously, Vikings Gone Wild we talked about before. So they've done a ton of stuff with these games that really have a little bit of this video game DNA to them. And I mean, Jetpack Joyride on any device, it's just an endless runner, right? I mean,
right. You
play as Barry, this guy running through a laboratory, and you have a backpack that's a jetpack and
of some sort or other.
Yeah. Pretty much all you do is if you hold down the button, he's shooting his jetpack and he goes up, and if you let go, he falls down. That's the entire game. And when I was contacted by Lucky Duck to look at the preview for the Kickstarter, I was like, what can they possibly do with this game?
And they did such a great job.
And it was fantastic.
Real-time, competitive, puzzle building.
It's so good.
Oh, it's so good.
And so, you know, again, young company. So they had some trouble with fulfillment, but they finally were able to ship out all of their copies. I mean, we liked it so much. Now, typically with reviews, if you review a Kickstarter, typically they'll send you the finished product when it's done.
A lot of the time, yeah.
We Kickstarted it. I didn't even care.
It was
I was
so
like,
great.
This game deserves my money. And so we got our deluxe version in the mail. I got did a little bit of an unboxing. Actually, if you would like to see what the components look like, One Board Family did an unboxing video of this game. You can find it on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/OneBoardFamily. You'll find that. And
that was amazing, too, because the components were already really good in the prototype that we originally
they
reviewed.
They were.
And then they got them even better.
Mm-hmm. I was so excited to get it. I am not really a solo gamer, and I played a solo game with Jetpack Joyride just because I was like, I want to play with these pieces. I want to put them on the board. I want to do some stuff.
Well, and you know what? You got so excited about it that Asher has been pulling it down to play solo games of it as well.
But do you know why? Because it's good.
It is. He got so excited that I think he said one of the last games he played actually pulled in Sam, which is one of the more recent things that's been introduced in the video game Jetpack Joyride. It's this giant robot that destroys everything that you can ride in.
I played with him. Sam's great.
Yeah. And they added him in the final version of the board game as well.
Yeah, all of the
extra special tools are
all in the game. They have different red tiles with the actual
with pictures of the actual
picture,
little
pictures on
devices,
all the different things like the dragon and all other stuff. So yeah, so that's Jetpack Joyride from Lucky Duck Games. I would say, I mean, that's definitely going to come to retail really soon. They're finishing up fulfillment right now. It is fantastic. The art is so good. Halfbrick does such a good job with the art in their games.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really excited about some new Lucky Duck stuff that's coming out.
Cool.
So there's some stuff that's coming out straight to retail in Q4 of this year that we're going to be getting in. I am super, super excited for you to check out Paranormal Detectives. I got a chance to take a look at it at Dice.com.
Right.
It's a lot of fun. So that, anyway, was Jetpack Joyride.
All right. Well, I got to run game night this week because you were good dad and went to curriculum night.
Yay.
Meet the teacher, see all the stuff. Specially requested. So I went and ran our usual game night. Claire decided at the last minute she wanted to come with me, and she brought Sparkle Kitty. She talked this group of older men into playing Sparkle Kitty with us.
Yeah, I mean, they're good sports. Like, I mean, I think
they were good sports.
We've got built up cachet with that group. Yeah. So,
but no, honestly, we had fun because it's the kind of game. It's so silly that you have to say the words out loud as you play them. Mm-hmm. That it's hard to not enjoy it, even if it's not really your style of game. It's just ludicrous.
Did they crack a smile?
Yes. Awesome. Several times.
Oh, man. I wish I had pictures of that. That's fantastic. Speaking of game night, by the way, quick pause. This show is coming out on Monday, September 23rd. If you are in the Worcester area.
Massachusetts.
Worcester, Massachusetts. And you have nothing to do tonight, come to New Kitchen from 6:30 to 9:30 and play games with us.
We're trying for a really big game night this week.
I think we're going to have a really great game night. I have a lot of people who've already confirmed. I'm so excited for this event.
Come and Andrew will teach you games.
It's going to be great. I'm really, really looking forward to it. So, anyway, back to the games!
But then we wanted to play something a little bit heavier, you know, a little bit more involved.
What? There's things that are heavier than Sparkle Kitty?
No, say it ain't so. And I gave them the choice. They were looking at our bag full of stuff, and one of the guys pointed to Imhotep, and he said, well, that I know nothing about that. Tell me about it. And I was like, I'd be happy to. It's one of my favorite games. And in the end, he beat me. But it was fun. It was nice to show Imhotep to somebody who had never played it before and talk about the different ways you do the scoring. Some buildings score at the end of the round, some score at the end of the game, some score immediately as soon as you place blocks on them. I still love just the really tactile nature of that game. You're literally building obelisks and pyramids and things like that.
Out of wood cubes.
Out of wood, big chunky wood cubes. Yeah. But also the strategic nature of normally on your turn, you're either placing a block on a boat or you're sailing the boat to a destination. So there's a lot of back and forth of, do I just want to get more blocks out there? But then other people are going to control where they go.
Right. Yeah, we've talked about Imhotep a lot before on the show. And I think that Cosmos is sending us a copy of Imhotep the Duel for review. So that'll be interesting for us to talk about that.
We'll
the difference between the two of them. Yeah, exactly. So that is Imhotep.
That'll play into a little bit of our topic tonight, too, because we have a playmat for Imhotep, which makes it so much nicer. I mean, it's nice already, but it makes it so much nicer.
You know what actually makes it triple nice is that the playmat fits in the box.
Yes!
With
it's
the game.
So great.
Yes. That is a huge... That's a really big thing for me because I see a lot of game collections with, like, for example, the Century playmats, which don't fit in the box, and it just... It's just annoying to me.
It just hurts you inside.
It just bugs me. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, the only other game that I played was more Draftosaurus.
Yay, Draftosaurus.
That game is so good. Actually, you know what? Last weekend at Boston Fig, I actually kind of pulled the game right rep aside, and I was like, have you tried this Draftosaurus game? Because it's really good, and it's kind of replaced Sushi Go in our house. And I love game right, but I just want you to know... I have to be honest.
It's so good.
Yeah, it's a really good game. That Draftosaurus.
I love it. It's so approachable, and the dinosaur meeples are so cute.
Yeah. Here's what I will say about Sushi Go, though. It's like $5.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's true.
It's, you know, you can get it in a little tuck box.
Also incredibly portable.
Yeah, you can't beat that. Draftosaurus, not quite as portable.
Not quite.
But yeah, it's still an excellent game. So that is the end of what I've been playing.
Well, I got a couple more quick ones. The last game we played on game night because we ran out of time was Monopoly Deal. It's the only form of Monopoly that we're okay with being in our house. It's not a great game, but if you like that sort of back and forth nastiness that tends to come with Monopoly, it's a good way to take that and really compress it down into about a 10 to 15 minute game.
I just want to share something with the Family Gamers podcast audience. I'm sitting in our office /
recording
Family
studio.
Gamers HQ, which happens to have our Kallaxes.
Kallaxi?
With our Kallaxi? Kallaxes. If there's any Greek scholars out there or whatever, or fake Swedish scholars out there, what is the appropriate way to pluralize the word Kallaxi? Anyway, I really love board games, and I am sad that I don't get a chance to play them as much as I'd like to.
Yeah.
I'm just a little bit of, you know, opening my heart out for the Family Gamers audience.
Aw.
I'm looking over, and I'm like, man, that game is so good, I want to play it. And then I don't, because I don't have time.
We don't have time.
So, oh, anyway, if you're like me, you don't have time, you want to play games, I feel you. I feel you.
Okay.
That literally, it was there. I needed to get it off my chest.
You needed to get it off your chest.
So, please, I have
two more games to very quickly mention.
Yep, absolutely.
Saturday morning is becoming dedicated game time with Asher and me.
I mean, I'm not jealous, but I'm jealous.
You're a little jealous.
Yeah.
I mean, bowling is good too.
But Yeah.
So we played a couple more rounds of Panic Island in preparation for our snap review.
To unlock the do not open envelope.
Yeah, we still haven't managed to unlock that, but we're getting closer every time.
We can't snap review that game without that thing being open.
I don't know, man. It's really hard to do well at enough different variants to open that envelope. But it's really good. I am surprised how much we ended up liking it. Like, I knew we would like it, but we really, really like it. That said, he also asked if we could play Rescue Polar Bears. I warned him that it is really, really hard to win.
We never won.
We won!
Whatever.
You asked me earlier how we possibly managed
to
do
it. Yeah, we went to IKEA today to buy a Kallax, because that's what we do at the Family Gamers.
Apparently.
I was like, well, you're stuck in the car with me, so I might as well interrogate you on how you beat this game.
All right, so I'll tell you, as far as I can tell.
Please, because I can't do it.
First of all, two players seems to be just slightly easier because you're not waiting around for it to get around to your turn again.
I don't understand that. Because, I mean, it's not like you can't communicate with your teammates. Is it because you guys had the best boats and so you were able to maximize the boat actions?
I mean, there's a little bit of that too, but it's also partly like you're not sitting there with like, oh, well, I have the last Papa Bear sitting on my boat and, you know, we're going to have to go through the reproduction and growth phase three more times before it gets back to me and I can actually drop that bear off somewhere.
So there's
a little bit of that.
Sure.
In having two player. We did curate our boat collection carefully. You're supposed to choose them randomly, but I said, no way. If we end up with one of us has the boat that can't carry any bears, then we're doomed.
Sure.
So we picked the icy cape, I think it was, that lets you flip over additional data token cards as an action, which was helpful.
Right. Because this game lies to you. It's called Rescue Polar Bears, and it's absolutely not the number one goal.
No, it is save just enough polar bears to keep going while you collect lots of data.
Right. It is a liar game.
But the other boat we got was the General All-Purpose Boat, which when you upgrade it, that player permanently gets an extra action on their turn. And if you upgrade it twice, that player permanently has two extra actions on their turn. So we upgraded both of those upgrades as quickly as we could. And that had a lot to do with us winning. Also a bunch of lucky rolls and lucky card pulls. Also, we did not break any ice, except for one time that we needed to do it to get through the ice flow. We just generally tried to not worry too much about the temperature going up and ice melting. Instead, we just did constant damage control of, the ice is going to melt over here next. Does it make sense for us to get those bears, or is there somewhere for them to flee to? If there's not anywhere for them to flee to, can we get there, pick them up before the ice melts? Sometimes the answer was, nope, it's not going to happen, and they're just going to have to be taken away by helicopter, and I just better make the most out of my turn if I'm not going to get over there.
Right.
So lots of trying to get the data tokens out there so we could pick them up as quickly as possible, and yeah, just not letting ourselves freak out when we pull a new, like, where's ice going to melt next? Oh, it's going to melt on tile 6, and the temperature is currently 18 degrees. That's great. We're not going to get anywhere near not melting that, so we're not going to worry about it.
Huh. That's really interesting.
It feels really counterintuitive.
Right. No, absolutely.
To play that way.
I agree. I totally agree with you.
But it works.
Okay. All right. Well, now we know.
Now we know.
And knowing is half the battle.
Polar bears.
And did you say you had two more, or was that the last one?
That was the last one.
All right.
Rescue Polar Bears. Data and temperature from Mayday Games.
All right. So let's do a quick rundown because I don't know if I repeated the names of these games after talking about them. We played Draftosaurus, Jetpack Joyride, Achille from Pandasaurus, Spy Club, and Cabo. Also, Brainwaves, The Astute Goose.
And Sparkle Kitty, Imhotep, Monopoly Deal, Panic Island, and Rescue Polar Bears, Data and Temperature.
All of that, and still I look at my collection and wish I played more games.
To be fair, on your birthday, we asked you, what game would you like to play? We'll play anything you want.
By the way, awesome birthday present. Just saying. That was Spy Club.
And it was.
And we played it.
And we did. But then you complain, you're like, but I'm not playing all these other games. I said, well, you picked Spy Club. Now you gotta live with it.
No, I don't mind that we played Spy Club. I'm not trying to say anything about whatever. Anyway, those are the games we played. Boy, howdy, I wish I played more games all of the time, all of the games. I need to, like, take a vacation just to play games.
Yes.
I don't know.
That's
anyway,
what a con is for.
That whole thing, that whole, like, from the heart, I just want to resonate with our listeners because I'm sure that so many other people deal with the same thing. That's all.
All right. Fair enough.
All right. Okay. I promised a segment that we haven't done in a long time. What, pray tell, is that segment?
We are going to do Board Game in the Middle.
That's my my game show music. I got nothing. Okay, so did you pick the board games, and have you already looked them up?
I have not looked up any games.
Okay, so for those of you who do not know what in the world we are talking about, we are going to take three board games, and I mean, you can cheat, I guess, if you want to, but it kind of defeats the purpose. We're going to pick three board games, and our goal is to figure out, without looking, which one of these three board games has the middle ranking on Board Game Geek.
This is the geek rating, not the average rating.
Correct. So we're going to get these three games, and we're going to try to guess which one has the middle Board Game Geek ranking. This is not complexity. This is geek ranking. The ranking of the quality of the game.
The weighted average or something. I don't know.
Something along those lines. And what we will do is we will put a poll in the Family Gamers
Facebook community
for these three games. And people can vote which one do you think is the board game in the middle.
All right. I think we should go with the three cooperative games we mentioned.
Okay.
So that would be Spy Club, Panic Island, and Rescue Polar Bears, Data and Temperature.
Wow. Okay, let me think about this. They are very different games. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to metagame this a little bit. Okay. I think that I'm going to look at the type of people who use Board Game Geek.
Okay.
Okay, and because of that, I think the ratings are going to go from the more casual seeming game to the more complex seeming games, but also with an eye on quality.
Mm-hmm.
I think that while it's really interesting and there's a lot of stuff going on, I think that Spy Club is objectively better than Rescue Polar Bears.
Sure. But do you think the people on Board Game Geek agree with you?
I do.
I think they disagree with you. I think...
Now, you haven't looked, right?
I have not looked.
So my vote is Rescue Polar Bears, Data and Temperature is the middle game.
Will be the middle game.
Is the middle game.
Okay. I'm going to say, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to say I think Panic Island is the middle game.
Really?
Because I am willing to bet that one of those two, either Polar Bears or Spy Club, got tanked on BGG.
Huh. Why would that be?
Either because it's too hard, or because it's too complex based on the theme. And that could go for either one.
I mean, I guess
Spy Club or Rescue Polar Bears.
If the marketing for Spy Club is towards kids, it's too complex for kids. It's not a super complex game, but it might be too complex for the target.
It's more complex than it would appear from the marketing. Same thing with Rescue Polar Bears, though. So, I think
I don't know. I mean, Rescue Polar Bears, with a name that's that long, I mean, I know this sounds really stupid, but with a name that's that long, it almost kind of implies to me, okay, there's something like...
There's something data more going on.
Rescue Polar Bears, Data and Temperature. It's like, okay, there's more there than just like
maybe
a cutesy polar bear thing, which is what I stupidly thought.
It is a cutesy polar bear thing.
It
and
is.
You have
those
to watch
meeples,
them drown.
Those meeples. That guy. Whoever designed those meeples. That guy is evil.
They look up at you saying,
please don't let me die.
Help
that guy's evil. Right? Anyway. So, okay. So there you go. So we have different votes. So I am voting for Rescue Polar Bears, Data and Temperature as the middle game. I actually think, to go all the way, full definition, I think that Panic Island was the lowest review. Rescue Polar Bears, Data and Temperature was in the middle, and Spy Club at the top.
Okay. I think Panic Island will get a solid middling review.
Okay.
And I think out of those two, I think both Spy Club and Rescue Polar Bears are quite good and surprisingly good. But I'm willing to bet that enough people did not break through to the surprisingly good part that one out of those two probably got tanked in the ratings.
All right. Well, there you go. So if you are listening to this, if you are like, no, you're wrong, you're an idiot, whatever, head over to the Family Gamers community. You can get there by going to thefamilygamers.com/community. We're going to have a poll right at the top. We want to know what you think. And if you want to make your argument in the comments, that's totally cool.
Yeah.
Because I got to be honest with you, nobody's winning a prize for this. But it's all about bragging rights. Who can be right?
I want to be right.
I know you do. I know you do. So, all right. I think that that's pretty much it for right now. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about bling and collections and all of the ways that somehow our board game hobby, addiction, whatever, ends up being a little bit more than we ever expected.
A little bit.
All right. We'll be right back. So today I got to do something really, really cool with our boys. Our friendly local game store is That's Entertainment in Worcester. It's the Pop Culture Emporium.
It's more of a comic store than a game store.
It is. They do comics, they do used books, they do sports memorabilia, but they also do board games. And
yeah,
honestly, they have a, I don't know, 20 square foot section of board games, and that's our friendly local game store.
I will say, from the last time you brought me in there, I was surprised at how thorough the collection was.
They only had
like one copy of most things, but there's a lot there that they crammed in.
I love this store for so many reasons. Like, That's Entertainment is so Worcester. It just is, right? I mean, they have everything from new in shrink copies of the original Legend of Zelda gold cart to a $450 Batman the Animated Series autographed numbered print.
Mm-hmm.
To like autographed Rob Gronkowski touchdown photo stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just everything.
I mean, not to mention all the new stuff they have. I mean,
the whole
outer wall is brand new comics.
Yep. And the entire, I'm air quoting ground floor just because there's like a raised area, is all aisles of boxes of comics. I mean, this place is just like, it's amazing. I mean, and it's just so crammed with stuff. But today it was Batman Day.
Yes.
And they were having some autographs. Mike Lilly and Bob Almond were there. Mike was doing drawings and Bob was doing inking. And both of our boys got like little headshots done. Asher got Batman in his Batman vs. Superman armor with Nightwing.
Kind of looking over his shoulder.
And Elliot got just Batman.
Just a standard Batman head.
Right, but I mean, they were drawn. They watched them get drawn right in front of them and get inked and all that stuff, and they got autographed and all. And it just really got me thinking about collecting, because I'm generally speaking, I'm kind of anti-collector. I mean, if people want to collect stuff, that's fine. Like, I'm not anti. No. Someone wants to be a collector. I don't
except our children.
I don't want to collect stuff. But I just really want to be really careful. And I say this as I stare at like my basically collection of Zelda stuff. But I just want to be really, I don't know. I don't want to have a lot of stuff for the sake of having a lot of stuff. And that's ultimately where it comes from. But it really got me thinking about what Rodney Smith brought up maybe a month ago now about board games and whether board games are something that have just become a collection or whether people have board games to play them. And well, we have a friend who, I'm not going to mention any names, but he is like obsessive about the quality of his board games to the point where he leaves the shrink on the top of the box.
Okay.
Right. He just kind of cuts a slit around how it's open, you know, just to maintain the quality. And constantly we have these conversations and I'm like, dude, it's a game.
It's designed to be played.
It's meant to be played. Just play the game. Right. And as we talk about building up a board game cafe and what that's going to mean and putting our games on the shelf for the general public to play them.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge thing. Like, I have to be comfortable with the idea that my games are going to get destroyed. And that means, of course, that some of them are never leaving my house, right? Games that are irreplaceable, those kinds of things. But I really want to talk about this idea, right? And we talked a couple of weeks ago about kids playing board games and how much more important it is that a game looks good for a kid to play.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, think of one of the first games that really, really drew Asher in particular, was Century Golem Edition.
Sure, because it, bright colors, great
those
art.
Those gems and the great art and the nice, really solid feeling coins.
Mm-hmm.
And just everything about that game is, it. You want to reach out and touch
it. It's a very tactile game.
And collect the stuff.
Yep.
And some games, you know, for cost reasons or because of the original way the art was conceived, aren't like that. But people have come up with ways to bling out their games.
Right.
We don't do it often, but a few of our very valued games have gotten the bling treatment.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned the Imhotep playmat, which is a small change that made a really nice upgrade feel to the game.
Right. The first game we ever blinged out was Lords of Waterdeep.
Yes. With the organizer.
Yeah, and that was huge for me because, I mean, Lords of Waterdeep,
it made the game easier to play.
Well, it made the game easier to play, and the box is not small, right?
Yeah.
And so you've got this big box, and then you've got an expansion on top of that, and the two of them, between the two of them, it almost takes up, like, half of a Kallax cube.
Yeah.
Right? But you put that organizer in there, and all of a sudden, number one, it makes the game easier to play. You've got all the setup stuff in that middle insert. You can just pull it out and leave it on the table and get rid of the rest of it. But you can also put the entire expansion in the base box.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's so smart. It's so, so smart to do that. And some companies are kind of getting on the bandwagon, like Smash Up. AEG released the big geeky box.
The big geeky box.
Which literally was a $15 cardboard box. But with all the expansions, you needed something bigger because it was just, there was no way to,
there was nothing else that they would all fit in. And if you've got these really nice looking card boxes, you don't want to ditch them all to stick them in some, you know, random.
Yeah, like a CCG collector box or something like that. Right. Exactly.
So that's a definitely a very real market. I mean, we've also succumbed to it with Role Player, since that's one of your favorite games. It's become an easy thing to be like, let's get you something to upgrade it a little more. Mm-hmm. You know, let's have some metal coins.
By the way, I'll take this opportunity to say, kids, if you are listening to the show, and I truly do hope that kids listen, because sometimes, I don't know, sometimes we get a little heady on this stuff, but I do think, I want this to be something that kids get to experience with their parents. But anyway, kids, if you are listening, if your parents have a game, if your dad has a game that he just loves, when Father's Day comes up or his birthday or Christmas or whatever, go to mom and be like, hey, dad loves Wingspan, right? Dad loves Role Player. Dad loves Lords of Waterdeep. Dad loves this game or that game or whatever. Maybe we can do an add-on to that. Because I can speak for myself with Role Player, like, I don't buy those add-ons, but I like them.
But you like them.
Right. Yeah. I would just never buy them for myself. And that is exactly what makes a perfect gift, is something that someone would like but would never buy for themselves.
Okay.
And so, kids, talk to mom, talk to dad. Great gifts.
I will give a little quick tip as well, especially since we were just at IKEA and we saw these and mentioned them. A super simple way to upgrade a game that has a lot of little bits and pieces, silicone muffin cups.
Mm-hmm.
Cost you maybe $2 to get, you know, 6 or 9 or a dozen. And then you can set them out. We do it all the time with Quacksacquedlinburg. We do it with Rescue Polar Bears because there's all the different kinds of components there. We would probably do it with stuff like Role Player if circumstances were different. And it's just a really easy way to say, oh, now I have all these little bowls to hold all my stuff.
Right. I can't even like speak more highly of the idea of just having a drawer in your area where you keep your board games for board game accoutrement. Like, we throw the dice tower in there. We throw a couple dice bags in there. There's some trays in there, and then there's these muffin cups.
There's a card holder for the kids who can't manage to hold a hand of cards. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great thing. But we're talking about collection. So let's talk about the idea of the board game collection as the board game collection. When we talked about this before the show, you mentioned something about basically hoarders.
Yeah. So, well, what makes a board game collection different from somebody who just can't stop buying board games? A collection implies that it is curated, that you've put thought into it, and that there is a purpose for everything in the collection.
Right.
It's not just there because it looked cool and you bought it and then you forgot about it.
Or because you wanted more of something and you could get it on sale.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, everybody's going to do that once in a while. It's hard to resist the siren song of it's on sale and it's so much like this other thing you already like. But that shouldn't comprise the majority of what's sitting on your shelves.
Right.
We talk a lot in the greater board game community about the shelf of shame or sometimes the shelf of opportunity. If you notice that your shelf of shame seems to keep growing, that's a sign that you may be becoming a hoarder rather than a collector.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really hard because of FOMO, right? And we had a whole episode about FOMO. And we talked a lot during that show about really conventions and the social FOMO. But
we also talked about Kickstarter FOMO.
Yeah, well, that's what I was getting to. You know, right now we're in this kind of Kickstarter economy where it's super hard to really know, like, is this game going to be available after Kickstarter or not?
Yeah.
And that fear, I think, drives a lot of people to buying stuff.
Oh, sure. I don't know. I think we talked about this a little bit during our spring cleaning episode, too. But sometimes it just requires a little step back and say, is this game significantly different from the other games I have? Is this game going to replace another game I have? And if the answer to both of those is no, maybe you don't need to get that game. I mean, that said, only you know what you like. Mm-hmm. And we talked a lot in our spring cleaning episode how for us, with a family of five gamers with very different tastes and abilities, our collection reflects that. And there's a lot of ways we could cull things down if only our tastes overlapped more. Hey!
Right.
But the point is that all of the games that we have on our shelves are there because we want to play them. You know, maybe we want to play them in a specific group or in a specific audience, or maybe we want to play them and just we've been too busy. But it's something that we can keep going over with our children, not just in the spring cleaning sense, but in the, you don't want to be the parents who have a shelf full of stuff that your kids are never allowed to touch.
Right. A lot of people have stories of grandma's dining room, right? Where they're not even allowed in that room kind of thing. And I mean, we personally don't want to subscribe to that kind of thing. I mean, you can even think of like modern day examples of this, like the Lego movie, the first one.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And you see exactly the same thing where you realize near the end of the movie, spoiler alert, that this kid is playing with his dad's Lego city.
Yeah.
And tearing it apart and rebuilding it. And his dad comes home and like freaks out about it.
Yeah. And that's partially a case of, you know, mismatch of priorities. Dad wants to play with Legos by setting them up and then keeping them in place forever as something for him to look at and appreciate.
The Craggle.
And the kid wants to pull the Legos apart and make new things out of them and use his imagination. And neither one of those things is wrong.
Right.
But when it comes to games, it is clear the purpose of games is to be played.
I mean, look, there are some beautiful games that you could just set up and look at.
Not in a house with small children, you can't. But that said, we try very hard to make it so that it's never, you can't play that, that's daddy's game. Sometimes it's, you can't play that, you're not ready for it.
Right.
But it's always with the eye towards, if you still want to play that when you're a little older, you can, and I'm happy to take you through it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it's for.
Right. Wow, we really got off the topic that I was intending for this entire conversation. I mean, it's good stuff, but this is a deep show.
I guess so, yeah. Coming back around, I think, some of the things that make kids really want to play the games are beautiful components. The more you upgrade a game, the more attractive it's going to be, not just to you, but to everybody else around you.
True.
So the best way to do that is to pull other people into doing that upgrade with you, or to figure out in that curation of your collection, maybe you don't need the base copy of a game that your friends have all blinged out. Maybe you just need to go play that with your friends more often.
Possibly true. Yeah. I think that it really is important for us to think about who we are playing our games with. When we talk about this idea of curating a collection, I mean, I have at this point made the decision with my collection to not purchase certain games that I really, really like because I'll never play them unless I'm playing them with certain other friends who own that game.
Mm-hmm.
And these are things that we just kind of have to figure out as we go through this hobby. And the nice thing about that, and by the way, this is something specifically related to playing games with your kids. We have some friends that love to play games, and I love that they're now in town and we can go over there and we can play games with them. But their kids don't really play games, and so they have a lot of the more complex stuff,
mm-hmm.
and we have a lot more of the family weight, I'll say, games.
Yeah.
And that actually works out really well because it allows us to expose each other to games because their kids are a little bit younger than our kids, so we can say, look, this is a game that your little ones might end up enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
Right, or things like this.
Especially when they're the games that kids and adults can enjoy together or adults can enjoy by themselves sort of thing. Like, hey, I'm going to bring this over. We'll play it for 5 or 10 minutes on game night. But if you want to hang on to it and see if your 3-year-old wants to play it, sure.
Great.
Habit games are great for that, by the way.
They totally are. Yeah, it really is helpful. Not only going back over some of what we talked about, curating your own collection, super important.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding the people that you play with, super important.
Mm-hmm.
And then the two of those things together, right? The ability to curate your collection, knowing the people that you can and will play with, and also knowing who you may be able to expose to certain games that maybe they wouldn't choose those games on their own. But depending on how well you know them, you might be able to introduce them to something that they will end up liking.
For what it's worth, our conversation near the beginning also got me thinking, where we talked about, are you a board gamer or are you a board game collector? Keep in mind, not everyone who likes to play board games wants to have a wall full of board games. It's a crazy thing to think about. I know. Crazy. But we have friends, and also my mom, who will happily play just about any game you put in front of them.
Right.
Would love to come over for game night.
Yep.
Have no interest in buying their own copies of the games because they know they can always come over and play with us.
Well, I mean, that goes back to what I was saying before.
But don't look down on them as, you know, being inferior somehow in our hobby just because they don't want to collect games.
Oh, I mean, I think they're brilliant because they don't just spend any money.
I think it's great.
I mean, I don't know. I don't know where I really wanted this conversation to end up. I just thought it would be really interesting to kind of talk about collecting and all these various aspects of collecting and how we as parents can make our stuff, because we hear a lot like, oh, how do I get my kids into games? Well, if they don't want to play games, then don't force them, right? But
that
doesn't mean you can't make your games more potentially attractive to your children.
Right. We've talked about it before. Don't always just say, oh, well, I have to play kids' games with my kids.
Yeah,
and I don't like kids' games.
Because I think that ends up being really condescending.
It's condescending, and if you're not enjoying it, they can tell.
Right. Any teaching seminar or any kind of training that you would get about teaching is going to say, above all else, be excited about your topic.
Yeah.
Because if you're not, then the people that you are talking to are not going to be excited about the topic.
Right. Now, obviously, we have to temper this. Even if your kids do like to play games, they might like to play a type of games that you're not naturally excited about. Swallow that, play it with them anyway, keep trying, and see if eventually you guys can come to a middle ground. But you come to that middle ground when they're like 10 or 12, not when they're 5 and 6. But back to what we were trying to get at before, don't feel like you have to play kid-themed games with your kids, or that that's all they're going to be interested in. Play the games you like, let them see it, and the more attractive your games are, the more likely they are to want to play them too. It's one of the reasons we talk all the time about how to rule shift and make things work for a younger age range.
There are very few companies that spend the amount of development time and money and energy on games for kids that they do on games for adults. That's just a reality, right? I mean, Haba is one of them. You know, that is their bread and butter. That is what they do. But there are a lot of companies out there that release games for kids, and they're thinly veiled copies of game X or game Y, right?
Yeah.
That's just what they do. And our kids can see through that, you guys. Like, they're not dumb.
It took a little time, but they're there now.
They are. They really are there. And some of it is games for kids that are actually good.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's a terrible analogy, but I'm going to make it anyway. People talk about dogs, and they say, oh, this dog is like this or like that, or they're this breed or that breed or blah, 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 blah. People talk about cats, they're like, it's cat, does stuff, right? And it's kind of the same
way. That happens with games, yeah.
Yeah, it's the same thing with games, right? It's like, kids' games are the cats. It's game, does stuff, right?
It's a kid's game.
Yeah.
You get the, it's a kid's game, it's good for like 8+.
Or you'll get things like, oh, it's a kid's game, but it's actually good. Like, that's something that's a shock.
Yeah.
Right? And that's terrible.
Well, I mean, that's part of what we're trying to combat here, right?
Absolutely, right. So there's two ways to do that. One of them is to find those kids' games that are actually good, and the other one is to say, look, our kids are not dumb. There are entry-level games that are not necessarily kids' games. Now, obviously not things that have inappropriate content and these kinds of things, right? But there are entry-level games. Any game mm-hmm. that you would be like, well, how do I get my non-playing girlfriend to play this game? How do I get my non-playing dad to play this game? Mm-hmm. Oh, you find these games. Those same games are the games that you can introduce to your kids.
As long as your kids are reading.
The
non-reading kids, you do have to lean a little bit more into the kid games, but not exclusively. We already talked a little bit about Imhotep earlier tonight. A lot of these abstract kind of games that don't have a lot of text, you would be surprised the number of 4 and 5 and 6-year-olds who can pick those up and start playing, not necessarily well, but well enough to have fun.
I totally agree with you. I mean, I think we're kind of all over the place with this show, but I think we're talking about some stuff that we're like really passionate about, and it really has been on the forefront of our minds. The idea of collecting, the idea of collection curation, the idea of really looking at your life and the season of life that you are in, and curating your board game collection not around what you wish could be. Exactly, what you wish could be, but having your collection meet you where you are.
Yeah.
And how incredibly valuable that is. And how important it is to say, listen, I would love to buy Terraforming Mars and its 18 expansions. but I haven't bought Terraforming Mars. I don't own a copy of Terraforming Mars because of the season of life that I'm in.
I am finally learning to stop buying more word games because they never get played in this house. And since they never get played in this house, the like 6 I already have are plenty.
Right. Right. So that's pretty much it for this show, I think. Be mindful about your board game collection. That's really what we're encouraging you to do, and invest in the games that are going to get played.
I 100% agree.
All right. Well, even though you agree, I bet you there are some people who might not agree. So we should probably provide them with a couple of different ways that they can get a hold of us. The easiest way to do that is going to be on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at FamilyGamersAA. We mentioned the poll in the Facebook community. You can get there by going to thefamilygamers.com/community. Or if you want to reach out to us directly, you can just send us an email.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Or Andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Don't forget to subscribe to this show on whatever your podcast subscription source is. And please tell your friends about the Family Gamers podcast. Mm-hmm. You know you have other parents, aunts, uncles, grandparents in your life who want to know more about how to play games with the kids in their lives.
Right. Next time you go to a play date and there's a lull in the conversation, just turn on the Family Gamers podcast and they'll ask you, what are you listening to? And then you can tell them. It'll be perfect. Fill in that conversational void with the Family Gamers.
Yeah, because I'm not awkward enough doing that in person. I'll do it over recordings now.
Sounds great.
If you can't manage to do that, leave us a review.
We would love it if you would leave us a review. We got another review, no text, just some stars, but we would love it if you gave us anything, some comment, something you like, something you don't like. Doesn't have to be 5 stars. We just want it to be honest.
Yeah. If you don't use Apple Podcasts, you could also look us up on TuneIn or Stitcher or Spotify, your podcast catcher of choice.
We're everywhere as far as I can tell.
Last, but definitely not least, you can check out our Pod Pledge.
To be part of the Family Gamers family.
Pod Pledge is like Patreon, except better for podcasters.
That's right. You can go to thefamilygamers.com/podpledge to check that out.
Become part of the family. We'll even mention you in our Twitter Follow Fridays.
Mm-hmm. Well, Anitra.
Andrew.
I think that that's going to be it for this week.
All right. Until next week, play games with your kids.